big show for you here today. We talked through Rams, Seahawks, big game from Seattle, big game for both of these teams, but the Seahawks pulled this one out. We talked about JSN's performance, Clint Kubiak, Sam Darnold, and that electric Seattle defense. Also, fallout for the Rams. What's next? What's to look for this offseason for that team? Same deal with Patriots, Broncos. That was obviously a very different looking contest, but we break that down from multiple different angles as well, and including a first look at the Super Bowl matchup. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because the Super Bowl matchup has been set. The conference championship games are in the books, and here to talk about all of that with me is our guy, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Great day to talk ball is right, Matt. I'm getting a bounce in my step. You can probably imagine why and what a championship Sunday. We got the old school snow globe game. We get the new school pinball game. Both games went down to the fourth quarter. We have a great Super Bowl matchup. Just a lot to break down and just a lot to celebrate. It's been an unbelievable playoff so far. Hopefully we'll get one more great game, but even if we don't, I think what we've seen the last 3 weeks has been far over expectation.
No doubt. I think this playoff so far has been everything that it possibly could have been. Tons of exciting games, including these two that we're going to break down today. And, you know, signature performances by teams that we definitely did not expect to be in the Super Bowl here at the beginning of the regular season. You know, I don't know anybody that forecasted a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl. If there was somebody out there, shout out to them. Congratulations. They clearly know a ton of ball, but those are the two teams we've gotten in the Super Bowl, and that feels really emblematic of what this season is, what it was, and we'll get to all that when we do our first look at the Super Bowl at the very end of the show. But before we get into that, we have to break down the two games that we saw this weekend, and we're going to start with the NFC Championship game. Seahawks 31, Rams 27. Let's start it off with the winners, as we always do here. We could kind of talk about this game in totality because, Scott, this was, to me, in many ways, just a perfect football game. Like, you had two great offenses going at it, no doubt about it. Two great offensive performances. Obviously, it's a really high-scoring game. But it wasn't like either of the defenses. The Rams certainly had their, you know, their flubs there. And obviously, the Seahawks gave up 226 deep passing yards to Matthew Stafford, which, according to Next Gen Stats, is the third highest mark by a defense in any game in the last decade. And that's a great defense on the other side. But they made plays on the defensive side of the football, too. So it wasn't like any one offense or defense was just getting worked here. It was a really incredible performance by both teams all the way around. Seattle just ends up winning it.
I mean, you know, I'm a Patriots fan, but this felt like the two best teams in football. I think when the playoff bracket was set, we were imagining could these two teams meet in the NFC Championship game. They obviously had classic Thursday night game about, what, 6 or 7 weeks ago that Seattle stole. The Rams had control of that game. Seattle stole it late, won it in overtime, which may stand as the best game of the regular season. In a regular season that was filled with games like that, but I think that might have been the game of the year. And just this game was haymaker after haymaker. And, you know, Puka and JSN were playing a game of can you top this? I'm curious if you had your life depended on it for a current receiver in his current form to play a 60-minute football game tomorrow, JSN or Puka, who would you go with? Because, man, And as a Patriots fan, I was terrified watching those guys because I'm like, I don't know how we're going to stop either one of them in 2 weeks. But I was sad when this game ended. I would have loved to have seen overtime. But again, it felt, you know, the Rams, hat tip to them. They couldn't have been worse than the number two team in football, and they might have even been the best team in football.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Rams and kind of what comes next post-mortem there. But I do want to stick on Seattle. And I think we do have to kind of talk about the passing game specifically in this one, because this was really a show, not just from Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but it was a show from Sam Darnold. It was a show from Clint Kubiak, who Tom Brady could not stop praising all night, which certainly sends up my antenna when I'm thinking about, you know, the Raiders hiring a head coach, right? My prediction now is we're not going to get a head coach announcement from the Las Vegas Raiders until after the Super Bowl is played in a couple of weeks, because it sure sounds like Tom Brady's infatuated with Clint Kubiak, and deservedly so. So show. Last night was a great example why. I do want to talk about Jaxon Smith-Njigba, because I think this game, Scott, really showed just what a tremendous player he has become. This is a guy that I've always really liked. He's a guy that I've always really adored for his man coverage beating ability. And you know, last night you really saw what makes him so special as a route runner. I was saying last night that there's nobody right now in the NFL, Scott, as a route runner who is better at selling you one thing and then doing another. I mean, he's a liar complimentary as a route runner, you know, in those head fakes, like he's selling you this and then he's doing that. It's incredible. Incredible stuff to watch from him. And what was also cool to see from him last night as well was, you know, he was in the backfield for a couple of targets. He was in the slot for 37% of his snaps last night, which I know that doesn't sound like much, but I think people forget he was only in the slot for 17.5% of his snaps during the regular season. So it was not only a great showing from a great player, but again, the weaponization of him from offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak was that's when you know you've got a good play caller, is when they're debuting new things as the games get more important, which I think we saw on several levels from Kubiak last night.
Very well said. Kubiak's fingerprints all over this game. And when a team has a clear alpha receiver, and you know, all due respect to Cooper Kupp, who had a nice game on Sunday, and Obviously Rashid Shaheed, they haven't completely unlocked him since the trade from the Saints, but he's a good player. But when a team has a clear alpha, and JSN had a target share that was just unsustainably high this year, that's going to have to come down next year, it's incumbent on the play caller to find ways to scheme him open, to find ways to move him around the formation, to make him as difficult to cover as possible. Obviously, JSN's going to pick up a lot of that after the snap. His lateral movement, his ability to change direction is so – he's incredibly fluid. You would not have to be a football fan. You show your grandmother, who doesn't care about the NFL, a tape of the Seahawks, and she'll immediately recognize what JSN is because he's so fluid. He's like a ballerina out there. His balance is unbelievable. But good for Kubiak for – every week the Seahawks lined up against an opponent and it was obvious, like a third of our passes, 40% of our passes are going to this guy. And you have to, without creativity with your play caller, that's going to die on the vine. It's so hard to make that work. And you hear people complain about, well, you know, they don't have any other help. And everybody knows that this is the guy off the bus, but you know, there's ways around that with motion, with slot reps. I wouldn't even mind seeing JSN get some carries, maybe the way they should actually take a page from the Rams playbook, the way they occasionally give Puka that jet sweep action. And even on fourth down plays in Chicago, right? Puka was running for the key first down. I think they could be a little bit more creative about that. And we'll probably, if Kubiak gets this Raiders job or some other job after the Super Bowl, we're going to have to be a little bit nervous about how Seattle hires for its next coach, because it's been such a home run. You have the Darnold kind of a redemption season, right? I mean, he won 14 games last year, but the way it ended last year, he goes to Seattle. People really weren't sure what to make of him. He certainly wasn't a hot topic for fantasy. And let's not lose sight of the fact that no turnovers. Sam Darnold led the NFL, I believe, in turnovers from the quarterback position. He does not turn the ball over in a game where every possession felt critical. I also love his reaction after the game where they gave him the bait, you know, everybody's doubting us. Did you show everybody up? Did you show everybody they're wrong and all that? And he didn't play that game. He said, like, you know, I'm just trying to be a good teammate and proud to be part of these guys and this team and everything. I Sam Darnold is so easy to like, and should he win a championship, I'll be happy for him. Just to get to a Super Bowl is an accomplishment. I hope we view that way too. It isn't like you lose the game and you know, all of a sudden your season is meaningless or something. It's been great to see Sam Darnold become the star he was drafted to be. And really, it's been a blast seeing JSN become that player the last 2 years as well, because it was a slow onboarding for him. Obviously, they had two really good receivers when he was drafted. But now, you know, I think I might go with Puka, but JSN's right there. I don't know how to break that tie. That's why I come to you for my wide receiver questions.
Yeah, they're truly one and two. In terms of that question. And I think obviously Ja'Marr Chase belongs in this conversation too. Justin Jefferson, if he has a better environment around him, would be in this conversation as well. But these guys, JSN and Puka Nacua, have definitely launched themselves into tier one wide receiver consideration. And I think there's just little nits to pick here and there in terms of which one do you like better, you know, who's your quarterback, what are you trying to do? And yeah, Puka brings a level of physicality to the position that is really not in JSN's game. You know, when we're talking about, hey, can they give JSN some of these carries that Puka gets, which you mentioned earlier? I don't know, right? I don't know if he's going to bring that same level of aggression, the same level of vision and decisiveness and power as a wide receiver. But what JSN can do as a route runner in isolated situations, I do think is superior to Puka Nacua. So it's just, I think overall, like if I had to pick, I think Puka's slightly, like the way that you framed it, is really good. You know, if I had to, you know, for my life, I need a wide receiver performance tomorrow, and you kind of don't tell me who's the quarterback or whatever, I think it probably would be Puka Nacua, but I think JSN probably has like more staying power in terms of his long-term outlook because of what he can do and be really a fit in any offensive system. He's just truly maximized in this one. I kind of want to go back to some of the Sam Darnold stuff that you were just talking about there, because man, you're right. It's such a cool story. It's so easy to root for Sam Darnold, who I've gotten to talk to a couple times, is a real, by all accounts, like an awesome dude, who has stayed really cool and humble throughout this entire thing. He's the first quarterback from that 2018 draft class to go to a Super Bowl, which is pretty crazy for the highs that Baker Mayfield has had. The highs, obviously, of Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. It is pretty incredible, which is funny, by the way, that Sam Darnold actually pointed this out. I actually made it in 2023 as well when he was in San Francisco. So this whole idea that, oh, he's the first one to go to the Super Bowl from this draft class. Well, he technically has already been there, which is one of the times I actually talked to Sam, was at media night that night. But anyways, coming back to just this entire Sam Darnold season, we put the stat up earlier that he threw 3 touchdowns under pressure last night. And I think that really shows the development in Sam Darnold's game. Because I'll be honest, like some of the stuff that Joel and I talked on the preview was, this is the type of defense from a front perspective, what they do that gives Sam Darnold trouble. But he was so good under pressure last night, was so decisive, which I think is a credit to the design of the offense. It's also a credit, Scott, to some of these ancillary players. You know, you mentioned Cooper Kupp, Rashid Shaheed. Those guys had impact. Even Shaheed, when he doesn't get the ball, you can see on some of the like I watched some of the JSN targets on all 22 this morning, and you know, he's clearing space. Like, he has been a big addition, even if he never really popped for fantasy. He did have the 151 yard reception last night, the deep shot. But it's a credit to the ancillary players, it's a credit to the system, but it's also a credit to Darnold, because last time we saw him in the playoffs a year ago, the offensive line in Minnesota was really letting him down, and he was kind of wilting against this very same defense. And now, 365 plus days later, here he is going to the Super Bowl after beating this Rams team.
And in the 2 regular season games against the Rams, he had 4 interceptions. He was the main reason they lost that first game. And then two interceptions in the second game. So to play a turnover-free game against this opponent, and we know the book on Sam Darnold, right? You're trying to confuse him, disguise your coverages, give him different looks. You don't want to play you don't want to be like the Houston Texans. This is what we do. We're going to do it for 3 hours, as great as their personnel is. And you know, it helps when you have players like Will Anderson and some shutdown people in the secondary. But yeah, redemption to play a turnover-free game when you absolutely had to have it. And also, I was impressed, Kenneth Walker. Okay, so he had to be the main guy.
Yeah.
With Charbonnet out, means he needs to get more involved in the passing game, caught all 4 of his targets, means he needs to do some pass blocking, which is ordinarily what they would look at for Charbonnet. I thought Kenneth Walker came through in a moment where they needed to have him. Because as great as JSN is, you need to have second pitches, you need to have third pitches. You know, I was in a playoff postseason draft with 7 total managers with the RotoWire guys. Nobody drafted Cooper Kupp. That's how far his stock had fallen. And they were pretty deep rosters, too. I was trying to check the standings. I'm like, oh, who's getting the benefit of this Cooper Kupp stuff? Oh, he wasn't drafted. I think I took one of the, even though I have a chance to win that league, I think my final pick was DJ Moore. I'd like to swap that out now for Cooper Kupp. I don't know what I was thinking with that, but nice to see Cooper Kupp, who was the best player in football. I will always maintain in 2001, he should have been the MVP that year, but the MVP award is a little bit broken. But, you know, Walker was needed, stepped up. Kupp was needed, stepped up. And again, Sam Darnold has come a long way from the 6 interception guy against the Rams, especially the 4 picks in that first game, because they had such a huge yardage advantage that day. They probably should have won. If Darnold plays a clean game, they would have won. And so that's, you know, none of that matters now. Just like as a Patriots fan, I don't have to worry about the Raiders loss anymore. Sam Darnold doesn't have to worry about that Rams game. It's totally irrelevant now. And you know, let's, I hope there's continuity with this team next year, because I want to keep rocking and rolling with this offense. I want to draft shares of the backfield. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, JSN's going to be a first round pick. And Sam Darnold, this was a great year to go value at quarterback. Darnold is never going to be that expensive, even after this, you know, I guess he had a second breakout year because he did break out last year in Minnesota, but he's not going to be a top 10 fantasy quarterback. I think he'd be a great target if you're taking the position as a secondary approach.
Yeah, I love that call. And you just see what, how this team can become so dangerous when Sam Darnold is no longer just a passenger, which is kind of how we described him in the Niners game, right? He was just a passenger basically to the success of this team in the divisional round. And then he becomes one of the driving factors for the reason they get to the Super Bowl here. They win this game against the Rams. And you, again, you just see how dangerous the entire team can become. It's funny you mentioned Kenneth Walker, and I do want to kind of talk about his performance here a little bit, because, you know, Nate and I were talking about this on the Football 301 recap last night. I think he had the stat, Nate did, that from Next Gen Stats, Kenneth Walker was only used as a one-on-one pass blocker on 3 reps last night. Which is pretty smart. Again, that's smart coaching, because Kenneth Walker is not a good pass blocker. George Halani, at least according to Pro Football Focus, was used more often as a pass blocker last night than Kenneth Walker was, which again is just, it's good coaching, right? To not put Kenneth Walker in the position that he's not good at. It's a reason that Zach Charbonnet has played over him in a ton of ways. But then I think this is credit to Clint Kubiak, and of course credit to the player Kenneth Walker as well, Scott. They were able to weaponize him in ways that are really conducive to his success. He wasn't super efficient as a rusher. He did convert all of his third down runs into first down, so that was a good testament to Walker there, kind of being that short yardage guy. But the way they kind of used him, getting him out in the route, at least one screenplay last night, was really huge as well. 4 catches for 49 yards last night as a receiver. That felt like a nice big development. Again, that's something that I know for Kenneth Walker and the fantasy bros, we were really irritated all year long about Kenneth Walker's usage. But man, to me, this is kind of proof of concept of why you didn't want to wear him out during the regular season, because he does look so fresh. He does look so explosive. And they're also now showing him in ways like that we didn't see in the regular season, kind of using him more often as that receiving weapon here. So look, maybe it's all a coincidence because Zach Charbonnet got hurt last week, and maybe we never would have seen this usage from Kenneth Walker otherwise. But if it was intentional to save him for the playoffs, I mean, resounding success for the Seattle Seahawks, even if it irritated a lot of fantasy managers along the way.
I'm so glad you put a spotlight on the short yardage work, right? Because a lot of successful runs in the NFL are 1 or 2 yard runs. You're looking to punch in a touchdown. You're looking to turn over the down. And sometimes that's all that's blocked. There's not a lot to gain. You know, one reason why Ramondre Stevenson has been so lovely with the Patriots, because he runs forward. A lot of times Henderson doesn't hit the hole quick enough and he'll have those negative plays. We think of Kenneth Walker as a home run hitter. You know, you think of him, okay, you give him a bunch of carries because he's eventually going to rip off a 55-yard run. But to succeed in that interior short yardage role, the involvement in the passing game, and great stat from Nate, you know, pointing out that Walker actually wasn't, maybe I just want to believe it, because the first time I saw Walker pick up a block, I'm like, see, he can do it. You know, but
there it is. Yeah.
Was smart to not overextend that role. And, you know, get a lesser back who has the pass blocking chops to be involved, because you had to keep Darnold protected as well as you can. So that's such an important part of the game, is having that protector, that last line of defense before your quarterback gets hit. So Kenneth Walker, to me, takes a step forward because he's doing things that maybe we didn't see in the regular season. It was out of necessity, succeeding in roles that would not have been his MO during the season. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I think the common refrain has been, well, now that Zach Charbonnet has this, you know, tore his ACL in the divisional round, he'd be a long shot to be a serious contributor earlier next season, that, oh, the Seahawks will just re-sign Kenneth Walker, who's an upcoming free agent. I kind of wonder if now Kenneth Walker might have priced himself out of Seattle's range. I mean, if he gets into the open market, I do wonder if a team like Houston, like Washington, that's looking for a little more, you know, Joel pointed out those landing spots on the podcast last week. I wonder if those are teams that might come knocking on his door, and he will be fascinating fantasy player to discuss.
Houston's a great call. Man, do they badly need a running back? And this is the price you pay when you're good. You know, you might lose your offensive coordinator. You might lose your players who showcase themselves and make a case to get maybe a bigger bag elsewhere, obviously in the NFL with the salary cap, you have to make choices. And when your players play well, other teams covet them. And when your coordinators scheme well, other teams covet them. Other programs need them as right answers. And, you know, in a year where we saw Ben Johnson go to Chicago, we saw Liam Cohen go to Jacksonville, you know, could Clint Kubiak, I wonder if the Raiders job is good enough for him, actually. I wonder if I might want to shoot higher if I'm Clint Kubiak, because they have a big rebuild there. Although if you like Fernando Mendoza, yeah, you can talk yourself into the Raiders. Yeah. But yeah, this is the price of being good. You're going to get raided. And this is why you have to take advantage of these situations when they come up.
Yeah, again, we can have more conversations about the Seahawks. We'll have a ton of conversations about the Seahawks as they head into the Super Bowl. But let's talk about the Rams here real quick before we go to break. What a great season from Los Angeles. What a great season from Matthew Stafford. And I don't come away from last night, you know, pointing at too much from Sean McVay or anything from a game management perspective. The only thing that the thing that I think that really stuck out to me last night, Scott, that I was like, oopsie, there it is. It's the mistake on special teams, the muffed punt from Xavier Smith that immediately right away turns into a touchdown to Jake Bobo, which, by the way, that was also a really good design. Nate was talking about this last night on 301. I don't have the percentages off the top of my head, but the vast majority of times they're in 12 personnel and Jake Bobo is on the field, it's a run play. And to go first down right out of that swing into a touchdown pass to Jake Bobo off play action, great call from Kubiak. Jake Bobo's a big ass receiver, which is what the Rams have struggled with. They've struggled with big perimeter wide receivers. And it was just like, oh, yep, those are the two things that I was worried about with this Rams team. And that was a big moment that swung the game. You know, again, it wasn't like it was over after that, but still, you come away from this season feeling great about what you saw from the Rams, but what do you think about the future of this team as we head into next season? Older quarterback, older Davante Adams, who was great in this game last night after kind of struggling off the injury in the previous two playoff games. Just what's your feeling about the Rams coming up just short in what was an awesome season, especially from the offense?
I mean, selfishly, I just hope they run it all back. I mean, Stafford already a Hall of Famer, Davante Adams, I think already a Hall of Famer at some point. Football players sometimes decide, you know, the quality of life is important. I've done what I've done. I've put it all on the stat sheet. I put it all on tape. I've made my case as a great player. Maybe it's time to do something else. So I hope we see these guys run it back. And Blake Corum is a player who stepped forward for me. I mean, Kyron Williams is a good player, but Corum, it became a 50-50 or a 60-40 backfield for maybe the last 2 months. And Corum was the more effective player in the Seattle game. And somebody who I actually started in a use everybody once playoff contest where my options weren't as great as they could have been, but I actually felt confident that Corum would at least be involved in the game, which he was, and he's taken a nice step forward. We saw the Rams with their tight end usage, really interesting. I mean, during the season, they would go 2 and 3 tight ends more than any other team. They pulled back on that against the Bears. I wonder if it was to their detriment. They do escape with a win there. We saw Parkinson have a key drop in this game, but he looks like an interesting player, somebody I might want to draft next year. But it's all about if Stafford wants to come back. You know, hopefully McVay still got that fire going. It seemed like he might have been burnt out a few years ago. His love of the game may have been rekindled. This is all speculation. I'm not Jordan Rodriguez, you know, in the locker room.
No, I think you're right about that.
But it seems like that was the story, the general flow of McVay. But, you know, we always talk about the quarterback, head coach. You get those two check marks right, and they obviously have it with those two guys. And then for fantasy purposes, this was such a concentrate. Even with Corum getting into the party, most of their targets going to two receivers, most of their running touchdowns going to the same guy, and then, you know, Corum getting startable, their tight ends. This became almost a perfect fantasy team because the upside, the ceiling for all of their primary guys was high, and because of the concentrated usage, we knew, you know, Puka he has 14 targets off the bus. You know, Davante Adams has touchdown equity off the bus. You can start either of their running backs, their tight end. I think they had 17 or 18 touchdowns from the tight end position. I realize you can't platoon those guys, but Parkinson has the chance to maybe become a Ferguson's a talented player too. So we'll see where that goes. But
yeah,
I'm just going to miss the Rams, man. They played a pinball game. They easily could have won. They would have been a very worthy NFC West representative, and they would be the favorite that Seattle is today had they won this game. I just hope they run it all back, man. I hope everybody wants to come back because I don't know how many more years Stafford wants to play. I don't know how many more years Davante Adams wants to play. Stafford probably won the MVP this year. You know, Adams had the most touchdown catches in the league, and we already wrote a love letter to Puka. I mean, this was a fun fantasy team and a perfect fantasy team in 2025.
It really was. It was a hell of a year to draft Rams. And, you know, it was funny. The broadcast started off with Aaron Andrews saying, you know, people forget that Matthew Stafford barely, you know, was potentially going to start the season on IR. I'm like, you know who didn't forget, Aaron? You know, respectfully, you know who didn't forget? Anybody who hosted a daily podcast in August, you know? And I'm pointing the finger here because, man, that was just like a constant, you know, doom and gloom talking point about what was going to happen with Matthew Stafford. And you know what happened? He came out and probably had an MVP season and was just a few plays short of going to the Super Bowl. And look, you know, maybe this ages like milk. I think there's a 0% chance Stafford walks away right now. I after the season that he just had, I'd be shocked if we get some kind of Matthew Stafford retirement announcement in the next couple of weeks. And again, maybe that ages like milk. Obviously, he had to get in the damn immortal chamber and do all kinds of stuff to even just be eligible to play this season. That being said, I think that he's playing so well right now. Him and McVay are so dialed in. He was incredible in this game. He was incredible this season. This is a team that has cap spaces. They have cap space. They have two first round picks this year. They should be able to run back everything on offense and potentially even add on offense. I saw Daniel Jeremiah in his first mock draft of the season. That's when you know we're in draft season. He's got them taking a wide receiver in the first round, which is just like the rich becoming richer here at that 13th overall pick. I believe he had him taking Mekhi Lemon, who, by the way, I really like Mekhi Lemon. That's going to be a fun guy to discuss in the draft process. He would also be a perfect Rams wide receiver, oddly enough. So they could even add resources to the wide receiver room that's a little bit light after Nacua and Adams. Obviously, Terrence Ferguson could take a step forward at tight end. They'll bring back Colby Parkinson. They should be able to keep the offensive line for the most part intact. The only thing I would say is, I do think we're going to have to sit through, Scott, maybe not a full, you know, kind of several months long saga of what we did last year with Matthew Stafford's contract. But remember at the combine when this story broke, like, okay, he's coming back to the Rams or whatever. It was basically because they redid his contract on kind of a year to year basis. And I think that with the way he played this season and the way it ended for him, I do think there's going to be a little bit of a, hey, let's give Matthew even more money. And I'm sure the Rams would be willing to do it, but just keep that on your radar because I think we're going to have to sit through that. But for the most part, I do think this team does run it all back and we see a lot of these guys in the uniforms next season.
And you talk about aging like milk. I did last week my regrets, my right and wrong stuff for the fantasy season, AFC and NFC, and my NFC piece basically started with a mea culpa for getting Puka wrong, being worried about his touchdown equity and even being worried about Stafford preseason turned out to be a horrible mistake. So if you like to see fantasy analysts, you know, being humbled, go back and read those pieces I wrote last week.
You know, Scott, I've learned a lot from you over the years. And, you know, one of the things you always say is, listen, if you don't come away with a few regrets, like, you didn't do this right. And that's the reality of it, especially if you're I remember having the conversation with you when you said on the show, like, yeah, I'm fading Puka Nacua this season. To truly say, like, you're fading somebody, it shouldn't be like, I'm fading this guy that people are taking in the fifth round. I'm fading Kenneth Walker because of Zach Charbonnet. Like, that was something, by the way, that you did get correct this year, was fading Kenneth Walker at that price. But it's like, that's different than I'm fading somebody in the first round. You got to swing big every now and again, or else you're not going to have big hits either. So, I mean, it is what it is. I certainly got a ton of stuff wrong this season. We all did. But listen, you know what we got right was that this was going to be an incredible NFC Championship game, Scott. That is what we saw, an incredible NFC Championship game. And I can't wait to see the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Any final thoughts on either of these two teams before we throw to break here?
I'm just glad they played three times. Great time for football. When they had that second game, you thought, okay, this is hopefully a playoff preview and hopefully a NFC Championship game preview, and it felt like the NFC West was easily the dominant division, even with Arizona being terrible. You had three very good teams. Let's not forget the year San Francisco had, despite another injury ravaged season for them. And, you know, it's a shame this couldn't have been the championship game of the entire league. That's not the way the conferences are set up, but I see no reason why these won't be productive fantasy offenses next season.
No doubt. Will be interesting to see what happens with the Clint Kubiak situation, but otherwise I'm very excited to draft both Rams and Seahawks in my 2026 drafts. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the AFC Championship game. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it is time to break down the AFC Championship game. Patriots 10, Broncos 17. A little bit of a different score and very much a different game than the NFC Championship. Let's start with the Patriots here, who do win this game. Scott, as a Patriots fan, and you know, somebody who, again, shout out to you, and I resurfaced the video on Twitter last night, you know, your bold prediction about the Patriots in Las Vegas, and you know, just that's going to go down as one of my favorite moments of the podcast of all time, not just of this season, was you making that bold prediction and just espousing your love for Drake May and Mike Vrabel and this entire new look Patriots. Well, guess what? The new look Patriots are doing something that the old look Patriots used to do quite often, which is go to the damn Super Bowl. So Scott, Patriots win this one in, I think we can call it, ugly fashion, in what turned into, yeah, you always say like, hey, this is a snow globe league. This game literally turned into a snow globe by the end of the contest.
Yeah, glorious snow globe league. You're very kind about giving me props for that Patriots call. Again, you want to find the things I got wrong. I wrote a bunch of them up last week, so I encourage everybody to read that stuff. But it's been a really fun ride for the Patriots. Very likable head coach, extremely likable quarterback. And I thought it was just fun to have two championship games that were so different, right? The second game was a modern football game, passing and pinball, and you get to get to 30-plus points to win. At one point, I thought maybe 40 points might be needed to win that game, and points were at a premium in Denver. The weather, the elements, eventually the snow kicked in, the wind, every point was precious. And, you know, this year in the playoffs, every game was outdoors. We saw this game in Denver, and had they played in Foxborough, it would have been a snowstorm too. They've been getting pelted with snow, yeah, like basically half the country. I've been, by the way, between games, I shoveled like, you know, anybody in the Michigan area probably did. No fun. No bueno. Shoveling is very bad for you. Pay a neighborhood kid to do it. That's what I should have done. But, you know, all my Puka Nacua lost money. You know, I have to shovel myself. But, Matt, let me ask you this, Matt. So every game outdoors, okay? There's some talk about, well, should the Bears go indoors? You know, should all football be indoors? And I hope we never get to that, because to me, what makes sports great is diversity of style, right? Some teams are offensive teams. Some teams are defensive teams. Some teams throw the ball. Some teams run the ball. You have to play the game situation. I actually thought Sean Payton made a big mistake in getting the game situation wrong. When we break down the Broncos, we can talk about that. But I like that the two games were so radically different. And I like that this game was – you know, at one point, you couldn't see the yard markers. They superimposed them, and those things are kind of gaudy. And then eventually, I think that they must have lost the ability to do that, and they were just telling us where the ball was. And that, to me, was like a throwback when I used to cover high school football games, where you had to be your own spotter and your own stat crew and hope that your notes didn't get wet. And, you know, maybe I didn't like it in the moment, but I look back on it with nostalgia and with warm feelings. So I thought it was a blast to see an old school football game where any point mattered. Ramondre Stevenson, I teased him a little bit in the previous segment. I mean, I'm going to write about this later today, about the players who kind of, since it got cold, maybe the last month or two, who have moved up the most of my estimation, and Stevenson's in that camp, right? Vrabel doesn't mothball him after the fumbling problem. He eventually becomes the lead back on the AFC Championship team. Henderson's a change of pace guy. I know the stats for Stevenson maybe aren't great, but yeah, he was the key, the one long drive that New England had, the drive to begin the second half, chewed up a bunch of clock, put 3 points on the board. The one time they were able to move the ball basically the length of the field, that was the Stevenson drive. Obviously, May did a lot with his legs as well on a day where he didn't throw the ball particularly well. But I think Stevenson has been the big winner in this offense, a guy whose fantasy stock changed the most over the last 2 or 3 months.
And I talked about this with Boone on the breakout show that we did last week. I am so fascinated to see what people do with Travion Henderson's ADP next year. Because I think if you, and you know, Boone highlighted some of this, if you basically cut off Travion Henderson's rookie season at the end of the fantasy season, you're like, okay, that looked like a normal rookie season. But then you look at the conference championship game, and this has been the theme throughout the playoffs. Like, not only has Stevenson been getting way more opportunity, he's also been way more productive than Henderson. But then in this game, Stevenson plays 94% of the snaps. Travion Henderson, 6. He touches the ball 3 times for 5 yards, all of which were on the ground. And Stevenson, 25 touches for 71 total yards, which, by the way, of course, I had the under on our freaking prop show of 70 yards for Ramondre Stevenson. So another 1 yard miss for your boy here. Well, hey. We got a partnership agreement here, Scott. We can't be doing any shopping on this show. But nobody cares about my prop record. What we do care about, though, or what we should care about, is Ramondre Stevenson has been clearly getting the signal from the coaching staff that this is the guy we trust. It's nut cutting time. It's time to go to the Super Bowl. We trust this guy. And man, he was everywhere for this team in this game. So I think that is a huge indicator, or it should be a huge indicator for people in fantasy next year with Travion Henderson. I am really fascinated to see what fantasy analysts and fantasy players do in terms of Henderson's ADP next year.
And this team, this Patriots team, reminds me so much of the 2001 Patriots, where their best receiver was Troy Brown. And they had guys like Jermaine Wiggins was key in the Super Bowl, J.R. Redmond. Roman Pfeiffer was one of their defensive guys who was kind of unheralded. And I remember when Brady won the MVP, he's like, this is a team MVP award. Brady only had 99 yards into the final drive. I don't know if people remember that. John Madden was begging for them to play for overtime. But you had Stevenson looking like Antoine Smith. You had Mac Hollins. You know, I've totally flipped on Mac Hollins. It used to be like a cute little joke we'd make, like, oh, Josh Allen won the MVP and his leading touchdown guy was Mac Hollins. You know, now Mac Hollins goes to New England and I'm like, oh, you know, you want an MVP season, you get Mac Hollins on your team. You know what Mac Hollins is? Not much for fantasy. He is a glue guy, right? He's a guy who, you know, and he kind of gets in our way for fantasy. He was their leading receiver here. 2 downfield catches on a day where May wasn't doing anything downfield. One of them was on a gadget play. I thought Josh McDaniels, it may sound crazy to say, on a day they only scored 10 points. And the touchdown was mostly because of the defense. I thought McDaniels had a great game with the play sheet, and New England ultimately salted the game away with Drake May on the ground with that great bootleg left. Let him use the athleticism. Even if the play doesn't work out, the clock keeps running. I thought that was well designed. But yeah,
called his own shot there. I don't know if you saw that, but apparently May went in and decided, I'm going to do this. Didn't tell any of the other, which I think. There's like an option for the quarterback to do that. Maybe McDaniels did give him the Josh McDaniels gave him the option to do that. But nevertheless, like, May did decide to do that, didn't tell any of the other players, which is a part of what sells it so well to the Broncos, because everybody basically follows the run action this way and the quarterback just boots out the other way. So again, I think that's a huge credit to Drake May.
Yeah, you want the players to disguise it. Well, don't let them know what you're going to do. Do it. And look, I know New England has another game to play, but to me, to fantasy managers, the dream is, what about when Drake May gets the receiver room he should have, right? Mm-hmm. I was pleasantly surprised at what Stephon Diggs had left in an age 32 season. I thought Kayshon Boutte, along with Stevenson, you know, his stock trended up. It wasn't that long ago he was the best receiver on an LSU depth chart that was overloaded with talent. He probably would have been a first or second round pick had he come out earlier in the draft. He's had some personal problems. He's cleaned up his life, become a very likable player. He didn't have a great game here. May missed him on one throw. I think Boutte might have run a little bit of a longer route, not a narrow route, when he was missed on an inside cut. But he's had a really good season. But still, I want to see when Drake May has his true alpha, you know, as somebody in their 20s who can be a top 10 receiver. I don't know where they're going to find a guy like that. Maybe an A.J. Brown trade could happen. They're obviously going to draft late in the NFL draft, but we see receiver hits come in the second, third, and fourth rounds. That's not that unusual anymore. So I'm dreaming what we're going to see from that someday. But I just want to impart one more thing about the Patriots. You know, I get there was so much fatigue with Belichick, with Brady, with the avocado toast and the same team winning, and you get sick of it. And we saw that same fatigue, by the way, with Mahomes and Andy Reid the last few years. And I was part of that. I was glad to see. I didn't want to see Mahomes get hurt, of course. And I love watching him play. I love watching Andy Reid's scheme. But I was just glad a different team from the AFC would come. I wouldn't mind if it was Buffalo. I wouldn't mind if it was Denver or Houston or Jacksonville, or any of those stories would have been great. But again, this is not the 2007 Patriots. This is the 2001 Patriots. This is an underdog team. They're going to be an underdog in the Super Bowl. I know they played an easy schedule. There's no easy schedule in the Super Bowl. They're playing a loaded Seattle team. But Vrabel connects with all of his players intellectually and emotionally. I don't know how you can listen to that guy and not think, I'd want to play for him, or I'd want my son to play for him, or my nephew to play for him. Or, you know, he's just such an inspiring guy. And was obviously the right hire. They should have hired him a year earlier than they did because they made a promise to Gerard Mayo. At least they cut their losses and only 1 year of Mayo. Good man, just overmatched as a head coach, just like Josh McDaniels, you know, overmatched as a head coach, great coordinator. I don't see how you can look at Drake May and Mike Vrabel and be like, yeah, I don't like those guys. I mean, look, if you're an AFC East guy, fine. You're Buffalo, you can hate the Patriots all you want. Miami and the Jets, go ahead. But if you're a neutral NFL fan, just kind of watching the league, these are the type of players you should want to root for.
I'm totally with you on that. I think you have to be like insane almost to just scout the laundry about this. I mean, yes, we wanted something different than the Chiefs, right? We wanted something different than the Chiefs in the AFC. We wanted to see something different this playoffs. And like the Patriots now are that team. It's been seven years since they went to the Super Bowl last. And it's a completely different operation. Like 7 years in the NFL is a lifetime. And that's very well shown here in this team now that New England is sending the Super Bowl. It is kind of funny. And I think I saw some of the, you know, Thanos memes about this. Well, you know, you couldn't live with yourself. You couldn't live with the Chiefs being in the Super Bowl. Where did that bring you? Back to me. And that's the Patriots. I do think that is funny. It's a good joke, but it's just completely different. Like, yes, the laundry is the same. The jersey is the same, but this is a very, very different New England Patriots outfit. And yeah, so many guys that are worth rooting for on this team. I think it's really cool to see this team get into the Super Bowl. I love it. I'm really excited to see what they can do against Seattle. We'll talk about that in the final segment. Just a little quick look at the Super Bowl early on. But just sticking on this game, just real quick, wrapping up the pass catchers. You mentioned Mac Hollins, who led the team with 51 receiving yards. He ran 14 routes in this game, 48% of the dropbacks. I love your description of him as a glue guy. And yeah, just not only is it just I'm excited to see what Drake May looks like in future seasons when they surround him with some other wide receivers. I'm also excited to see what Drake May looks like when he grows up. You know, this guy is 23 years old. He's the second youngest quarterback to ever reach the Super Bowl by a few days, like a handful of days, other than Dan Marino is the youngest to go to the Super Bowl. And I think you saw this, you know, look, remember the sneak play, Scott, where, by the way, I'm not sure if he actually got that first down, but you know, he's like bumping around, running into Milton Williams, who's on the field in that moment. And he still sometimes looks like a Bambi, you know, like a little baby deer with his legs. You know, he's not like fully developed. Imagine what it's going to look like when Drake May really grows into his body, because clearly he's so physically talented as a runner. That was the difference in this game. Imagine what he's going to look like when he's in his quarterback prime years, you know, both from a physical and a mental standpoint. It's just the future is really bright in New England, and they're going to the Super Bowl here in the first year of Mike Vrabel. It's a huge testament to that team.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, May did not have a great playoffs. He put the ball on the ground too much. No. He still takes too many sacks. You mentioned that Daniel Jeremiah mock draft that's up, and you'll go check that out. And, of course, our guys, McDonald and Tice, they do such a great job with our draft coverage. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to start mocking soon enough, and I'll look forward to that series because those guys are so smart. But the Jeremiah draft had the Patriots taking an offensive lineman. They still need to improve that offensive line. I like Will Campbell, but, man, he got – worked by Will Anderson last week, and he got worked in Denver too. I mean, it wasn't
he did.
Hasn't been a great couple of weeks for him, but they're going to get better. The line's going to be better. You know, there were moments, you know, May, his first pass probably should have been intercepted at Denver. He throws for fewer than 100 yards, but you know, some games, I say this all the time, they can't all be Picasso. Sometimes you need a color by number job, or you need a etch a sketch, and this is kind of an etch a sketch game, a snow globe game. Something Mike Vrabel knows about, something that the Patriots know about. Again, the 2001 comps, you know, that Oakland Tuck Rule game was played in the snow. Brady threw for 312 that day, by the way. Vinatieri makes the probably the hardest kick in NFL history. I actually wanted him just to throw a Hail Mary. I didn't think Vinatieri had any chance of making that kick. It shows what I know. Kick was extremely low, but it maintained its height and somehow crept over the bar, and then we had overtime. But yeah, Drake May is going to be smarter. He's going to be more experienced. Eventually, they're going to have an offensive line that's a plus unit, because I don't think they – last year, the line was terrible, and I was just petrified that Drake May was going to get the confidence kicked out of him. This year, they improved it a little bit. And look, May, a lot of it's on May, and part of being athletic and being mobile is that sometimes you'll hold on to a play longer than you should because you've gotten out of it before. You saw Russell Wilson always took a lot of sacks, even though at peak he was maybe the most dangerous athletic quarterback in the league at his best. I'm curious to see what his Hall of Fame prospects come, because his second half of his career has been so uneven. But You know, the Patriots, this is a good team. It's going to get better. Now, one last thing. You mentioned Marino, Super Bowl, year two. That's the reminder that it's easy to say. Like, say the Patriots lose to Seattle. People are like, well, they'll be back. You know, arrows pointed up. They have all these things, you know, checked off. It's hard to get there, man. Josh Allen hasn't gotten there. Lamar Jackson hasn't gotten there. And I always say this, Dan Marino, if you had told me after year two, Dan Marino's going to have a healthy career, walk-in Hall of Famer, all these records, and a lot of playoff wins. He'll never get back to the Super Bowl. I'd say, you're crazy. There's no way. You know, Drew Brees will never get back to the Super Bowl. You're crazy. Aaron Rodgers will never get back to the Super Bowl. Who's the rollout? Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. Maybe they'll do it. But you're crazy. Of course they're going to go back. It's hard to go. Only one team goes. So you got to savor it when you get there, man, because you could never – You know, it's possible. There's a decent chance you're going to have a window, but Joe Burrow's still there and Patrick Mahomes is still there and the Ravens will be good again. Lamar Jackson's still a good football player. Josh Allen still might be the best player in the league right now. And I think eventually Buffalo's – man, it's a sin if they don't go, man. I hate this. I would hate it if Josh Allen became the canonical example of the best quarterback never to go to the Super Bowl. I want him to take that. And it hasn't been his fault in the 13-second game. A lot of games he put the points up. He certainly – You didn't play a perfect game at Denver, but they scored 30 points, right? I want to see him get to the Super Bowl. But just don't make any assumptions. Just because it's year two of the May experience and things should get better, he will get better. The line will get better. The receivers will get better. You're still going to have to beat 4, 5, 6 really good AFC teams every year. And you can't always assume those are going to be wins.
That sentiment right there, I think, perfectly transitions to the Broncos, who we're going to talk about before we toss to break here. Man, if I was a Broncos fan, if I was a Broncos player, I would be so, so, so frustrated in this moment because, listen, I think Jarrett Stidham played admirably, and I think especially early in this game, Sean Payton was dialed in. You know, like the scripted plays I think were really good. Stidham was good then. The game started off well. But, of course, you get the elements, you get the snow later on. But even before then, the wheels were kind of coming off for Stidham a little bit. He played like a backup quarterback, like a solid backup quarterback. That's what he played like in this game. And I would just be so annoyed that we didn't have our starting quarterback here, you know, and because you don't know if you're going to be back here next year if you're the Broncos, right? You don't know that you'll be back in the AFC Championship next season. You have no idea. And I firmly believe, Scott, you know, maybe you disagree with me. I think the Broncos are a better team than the Patriots. I think like 1-53, they're a better team than the Patriots. They were, I mean, if they don't get that fumble from Stidham in their own territory, do they have what it takes to mount a drive against this Broncos defense? I don't know. I said that last night to Nate. I was like, I don't know if they would have been able to mount a drive against this defense, especially in the conditions, because my God, the Broncos were such a good matchup defensively for what New England had on offense. I mean, we talked about Kayshon Boutte had a nice season. He had nothing against Pat Surtain in that game yesterday. That defensive line was kicking the New England Patriots offensive line's butt, especially Will Campbell. Nick Benito was having trouble just as we anticipated. So I would just, again, it would be really frustrating in this moment if I was a Denver Broncos fan, because I think this was a moment for them. And to lose your starting quarterback after getting a bad Josh Allen game. Like, again, we could talk about, hey, Josh Allen, best quarterback maybe to never go to a Super Bowl. He turned the ball over 4 times in that game. And you got that. Probably what's going to go down is Josh Allen's maybe his worst playoff game ever. You got that. Your defense did that. And then you lose your starting quarterback. Season's over in a snowy mess the next week when the Patriots scored 10 points and their quarterback threw for 86 yards. Just a very frustrating season for the Denver Broncos. A frustrating way for it to end, I should say.
This is where I wish Frank Schwab was here so I could make a Rounders reference. Mike and Worm get the crap kicked out of them in the VFW hall by all the cops. And Matt Damon says to Ed Norton, I had him. And that was the Broncos. They're up 7-0. They can kick a field goal to go up 10-0. I know we're in the age of enlightenment and the equity and play for the beginning and score as many points as you can. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if Sean Payton thinks about, Well, I got my backup quarterback here and the weather's bad and the forecast is that it's going to get worse. Maybe a 2-score lead looks really, you know, I didn't like the play they called on 4th down. So that factors into this too. Maybe if they call a better 4th down play, they convert. Obviously, 14-0 would seem almost insurmountable, but then you don't know at the time it's going to be a 10-7 game, but it certainly had all the looks of it. As a Patriots fan, I'm thinking, you know what would be best for us right now? If they went for it, we stopped them. And that's exactly, it gave New England the chance for their highest upside result. And I think, again, we're smarter now. The analytics, the metrics, all the win expectancy added, and all that stuff, all the EPA stuff, it's important and we're smarter. But that doesn't mean you can't kick sometimes. And I think kicking there, and I said it in the moment, was probably the right call. Stidham, he's a backup. He's a backup for a reason. I don't think he lost them the game. But once they got behind and had to throw with Stidham, it just made things more complicated. RJ Harvey, we have to talk about. Man, he had his moment, had his close-up. He really didn't come through after the Dobbins injury. It's funny. He ran so pure with touchdowns when Dobbins was around. But Harvey never quite broke through that window after then. And they were finding reasons to give Jaleel McLaughlin a handful of carries. Obviously, the quarterbacks always run the ball a lot in Denver. They like athletic quarterbacks. Knicks especially, but Stidham carried some of that too. I felt a little bit underwhelmed by what Harvey did in the playoffs. Curious what you thought. And, you know, I think what Marvin Mims did the last 2 weeks, it just means I'm going to like waste best ball shares on him. I want it to happen for Marvin Mims. I know it's a very crowded room. Franklin didn't play yesterday. Pat Bryant shows the talent to be a good player someday. He was hurt a decent chunk of this season, but he showed a little bit of flash in the playoffs. Obviously, Courtland Sutton is still a good player, although he's probably on the back nine now. I'll need you to talk me out of Marvin Mims because I'll probably talk myself into it, but a little bit disappointed that. What we saw from RJ Harvey on Sunday and really the last 4 or 5 weeks.
I'm with you. And I think that's something that Boone and I are going to talk about on the show later this week, is kind of what lessons did we learn from a fantasy perspective in the playoffs. And that RJ Harvey conversation goes really well with the Trayvon Henderson one, where I'm not sure that enough fantasy folks are going to have really baked in what we saw in the playoffs here, because it definitely didn't look like Sean Payton trusted RJ Harvey. And I think for good reason. Okay, we are going to take our final break. We come back, we'll have some quick thoughts on the Super Bowl matchup. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And, you know, we're going to have 2 full weeks here to preview the Super Bowl, okay? But, Scott, got to get a couple quick thoughts on the record here before we end this pod. It's Patriots and Seahawks. Seahawks right now are 4.5-point favorites, 46.5-point total in this one. I'm sure that's going to move around a lot, but I do think the Seahawks should be favored here. Just any early impressions, things to watch for this game, as we're just now beginning to formulate thoughts about the contest in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Certainly Seattle deserved to be favored. It was as low as 3.5 in some areas, and it went up to 5 in some areas before everybody went to bed Sunday night. They're the best team in football. Drake May is going to have to play better. I mean, he had the 3 scoring drives against Houston. The rest of their offensive possessions went nowhere. And then, again, only 10 points in the Snow Globe game. The one touchdown drive the Patriots had was aided by the defense. It was like 12 yards of offense from May and company, and he was much more effective as a runner than he was as a passer. So between the sacks and some of the turnover plays or turnover-worthy plays, Drake may be the first guy to tell you this. He needs to play a cleaner game. And then with the Patriots, it's just going to be, with all respect, Cup had a really nice game. We talked about Kenneth Walker. But obviously, when you're stopping the Seahawks, it comes to rattling the cage of Sam Darnold, and it comes to finding a way to keep JSN from just blowing the game up. So I'm really curious what New England comes up with to confuse Darnold, and how are they going to cover maybe the number one or number two, depending on how you feel on Nacua. You know, JSN is that receiver. He's wearing that yellow jersey right now. If he has the type of game he had on Sunday against the Rams against New England, it probably means the Patriots lost. But it's going to be a blast. It's two fun teams, two teams with easy-to-like organizations. I think the Seattle, I talked about, look, maybe people are always going to hate the Patriots because of the success they've had, but I think Seattle's another team, fan base, city, easy to like. It's a really smart city. Yeah. It's an educated city. It's, you know, it's like the first, one of the first cities in America where everybody was online and exchanging ideas. And so many of the best writers in the fantasy and NFL space are from the Pacific Northwest. I've always had an affinity for Seattle. You know, I wish the Sonics were never robbed from them. I think Seattle will eventually get a basketball team again. Their hockey team has been successful as an expansion franchise. The Mariners, the only team that's never been to the World Series, is your baseball trivia question. They're a really fun watch. They just missed against Toronto in the ALCS. And you know, Seattle's, I've always thought they had great fan base, great city, great colors, you know, that angry seagull and everything. I mean, I'm a big Seattle guy, so could not be more excited for this rematch of the Patriots and Seahawks.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this game. I think there, as you mentioned, so much to root for on both sides. I would say two kind of just matchups to watch on either offense right now. By the way, real quick, since the producers are trolling me here by showing this, this narrative is just like outright irritating. It's like making me mad online that the like there were Zoom. If you're watching on YouTube, you see the graphic that the NFL put out, you know, where they're chasing the Super Bowl. It's all these teams. I'm sure you've seen it by now if you're chronically online like me. If you're not, congratulations. Don't even bother figuring this out. But yeah, the fact that people are resurfacing this graphic is like, look who's up at the front. Sam Darnold and Drake May. So is Malik Nabers. So is Baker Mayfield. So is freaking Travis Hunter. Like, come on. NFL Twitter is terrible at conspiracies. If you're going to be a conspiracy theorist, at least be good at it. NFL Twitter is terrible at conspiracies. And if you're like a big name in the space and you're sharing this, shame on you. Give me a break. Okay, that's all I got to say about that. Scott, don't even acknowledge.
Why is Tua in the middle of that graphic? That's what I want to know.
People are asking. Open up your third eye and ask why Tua is in the middle of the graphic. But seriously, from a Super Bowl perspective, when we're talking about this game, the two matchups I'd say when either team has the football, for the Patriots, it's pretty simple. Will Campbell and those guys pack a lunch because that defense is so good. And you know, Charles McDonald made a great point on 301, not this most recent episode, but the divisional round recap, where we almost kind of just talk about the Seahawks defense as one entity because Mike McDonald is kind of the face of it because he gets so much credit, but there's so many good players on this team that we will talk a ton about over the course of the next couple of weeks here, deservedly so. I mean, Nwosu on the defensive line, Byron Murphy and Leonard Williams are absolutely electric players. So again, that matchup up front, you know, Tank Lawrence, Derek Hall, like all these guys are going to be tough for New England to go against. That's obviously the matchup to watch. And then defensively for New England, when Seattle has the ball, of course you want to rattle Sam Darnold, no question. But the other thing to me is, what are you doing to cover Jaxon Smith-Njigba? Like, is this a game, Scott, where Christian Gonzalez tracks him around the entire game? You know, do we see them? Because he's a tough guy to bracket, right? Because he moves around, he moves into the slot. And that's some of the times we've seen this New England defense give up big production, is when somebody can move into the slot and get away from those perimeter corners. And obviously, I just said at the beginning of the show that JSN was moving around more than ever last night. So I'm really excited to see this matchup, especially. That one is going to be key to me, and I just don't know how you take away a guy like Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but that's going to be the big task of Christian Gonzalez here, of Zach Kaur, the kind of interim defensive coordinator here, with Terrell Williams obviously battling prostate cancer, and Mike Vrabel will of course be a big part of that. But Scott, can't wait to watch this game. Those are the two matchups I think people should watch and we should discuss a lot the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks to try to solve JSN. It's good luck, Patriots, but man, it's going to be a fun Super Bowl. And I you outlined the two matchups I would have spotlighted as well. So spotlighted, focused on. I don't know. I'm not here to play English teacher. I'm just excited about football.
I'm excited about football as well. Always love breaking down football with my guy, Scott Pienowski here. Scott, thank you as always. And congratulations to your Patriots. We'll be checking in with you regularly here as we discuss this game. As for today's show, that is going to do it. As I mentioned earlier, Wednesday, Justin Boone and I will be back to put a bow on the postseason by identifying what mattered most from the playoff games for the 2026 fantasy season. Again, those ADPs that maybe should or should not shift based on what happened here and what we saw in the postseason. We're also going to dive back into your dynasty debates. We got a lot more room for this segment in the coming episode, so get your dynasty questions into fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. As I said last week, bonus if your question does not mention Brian Thomas Jr. We have a bajillion Brian Thomas Jr. questions, and I'm not sure I have anything new to say. So don't send any BTJ questions in. Send in questions about literally anybody else other than people who play for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We would love to cover it. Until then, we are out.